you could see how it was more just a recording of conversations.
Correct, correct.
And then the conversation ends.
You'll see that today. Okay, good morning. Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Me'ilah is daf Gimel. We are continuing from yesterday's daf. Just a couple of other words of introduction that I didn't mention yesterday that I'm just going to bring out today. Again, the issur of Me'ilah is to misappropriate, to take something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and to use it for your own benefit. That's a simple simple understanding of Me'ilah. I quoted the Rashi yesterday in Chumash. Rashi says that the word mol means to change, meaning that you're affecting a change in the item. And that Rashi will come in handy a little bit later on in the Masechta as we further analyze how exactly does one violate the Issur of Me'ilah. I mentioned yesterday that the Torah talks about the consequences of a person who's being mola, meaning when you are mola behektish, when you misappropriate, so the consequences is that you have to make full restitution, Karen, plus add a fifth chomish, plus you have to bring a karban asham. And that's, of course, all if it's done b'shogeg, if you did it inadvertently. If you did it b'mezid, if you did it deliberately, so it's machlok, it's what exactly the punishment is, whether it's a lav or whether it's mitzvah b'dei shemayim, but that's the consequences. Where is the azhara? Where does the Torah tell us not to be mo'al? It's intuitive, I know. It's extraordinarily intuitive that if something belongs to the Mizbech, if something belongs to Bedek HaBayis, so you're not allowed to use it. I understand the intuition of the halacha, but intuition is good, but where does the Torah actually say, don't be Moal Behektesh? So the answer is, the Torah never says that. The Torah never actually articulates that it is prohibited, it is a lav, lo, simol, right? I'm making up a pasuk, but in other words, there is no pasuk, right? The pasuk that we learned yesterday is im ma'al, right? This is what happens if you. These are the consequences. But where does the Torah say not to do it? So there are two basic approaches to this question. Neither of them is explicit in the Gemara. Neither one. First, there's a Rashi, and the Tosfos also agrees with Rashi. It's learned through a gzeira shava. Now, it's interesting because the Gemara doesn't really formulate this gzeira shava. But Rashi and Tosfos both state that there. I mean, the Gemara doesn't formulate the gzeira shava for this purpose, but there is a gzeira shava of chait from truma. That there is a comparison of Me'ilah to Truma. Now we know that a non-Kohen is not allowed to eat Truma. So Rashi say that just like a non-Kohen is not allowed to eat Truma. Now Truma is to a certain degree Kodesh. It's something that, the rest of us, the non-Kohanim in the world, are not allowed to eat. It's too holy for us. Kohanim are allowed to eat it, but we're not allowed to eat it. So just like the non-Kohen is not allowed to eat Truma, so too, anything that is designated for the Mizbeach, we're not allowed to eat as well. So the rule is Ein Onshin Min Adin, but this is not really a Kav HaChomer, this is a Gzeira Shava. So this is one approach in terms of how we know that that there's a prohibition, there's an Isser of not being Mol Behektesh. The Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Me'ilah, So he learns it out from a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. The pasuk says, "Losucha lachob asherecha unaderecha asher tidur." It's forbidden to eat the meat of a carbon ola. The Torah says that basically, once you have a carbon ola, you're not allowed to eat the meat of it. Now, the Torah doesn't actually say, and if you eat it, that's me'ila, but the Rambam says, but from that pasuk, we can deduce that there is an isser of me'ila. That's the source of the isser of me'ila, where the Torah tells us not to eat the meat of a carbon ola. So that's two basic approaches in terms of how we know that there's an isser, there's an azar in the Torah of not to be mol behektesh. Okay. Remember what we talked about yesterday? We had a Mishnah that started off from a Masechta talking about kachikashim, where you shecht it in the south side of the azara. So kachikashim can be an ola, a chatas, an asham. And the halach is that they're ton shechita b'tzafon. They need to be shechted up in the north. But you didn't. You blundered. You messed up. And you shechted it rather in the south. So, the Mishnah says that there's a din of me'ilah by those karbanos. And basically, our discussion yesterday was, well, how kaddish are they? Right? The fact is that you blundered. The fact of the matter is that you can't offer this now on the Mizbeach. Okay, so now, how badly did you blunder? So you'll remember yesterday that we had a machlokus between Rabban and Rav Yosef. Now I'm reminding you because, number one, I enjoy reviewing yesterday's daf, and number two, it's because it's also going to come in handy for today's daf as well. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef have a debate in terms of if you did this, meaning you shechted a chatas or nasham or ola in the south side of the Azara. Can you put it up onto the Mizbech b'di'evit? Can it stay up on the Mizbech? So machlok is Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi says him, alu yardu. If you put it up there, it's got to come right back down, meaning it has no business whatsoever being up on the Mizbech, even b'di'evit. Rabbi Yosef says, no, im alu it lo yardu, that if it goes up onto the Mizbech, it can keep it up there on the Mizbech, meaning the Mizbech can tolerate it to the point where, lichatchila, you shouldn't put it up on the Mizbech, but b'di'evit, once it goes up there, it can remain up there. Now, that machlokus will be critical in terms of understanding our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that when I have kachet kachim that was shechted in the south, the Mishnah says there is a din of me'ila. There is a din of me'ila. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, this is one of the most basic rules by all of Masechta Me'ila, is that by karban, when we say that there is me'ila by karban, that's only by kachet Hashem, which means that there only is a din of me'ila, an isra of me'ila, on those things which are expressly designated for the Mizbeach. If it's not intended, if it cannot go up onto the Mizbeach, so there's no Isra of Me'ila, certainly on a Da'araisa level. That is one of the most basic rules, which we're going to be reiterating for the next 3 weeks, time and again. So, if that's true, so then how do you understand our Mishnah? So Rav Yosef has a very good time understanding our Mishnah, because Rav Yosef says, Im alu lo yardu, which means that according to Rav Yosef, when you shechted your kachet kachim on the south side of the Mizbeach, it can go up, b'di'evit, it can go up onto the Mizbeach. It still qualifies as kachet Hashem. So therefore, according to Rav Yosef, when our Mishnah says that there's a din of me'ila, it means me'ila min haTorah. It still is kachet Hashem min haTorah. Good. And it still is an Isra of Me'ila. What about according to Rava? Rava says that Yishechet on the south, that's it, it's over, it's done, it's disqualified. Not only is it disqualified, you can't put it up on the Mizbeach. And even if you did put it on the Mizbeach, it's got to come right back down. Im alu yardu, says Rava. So that means it's no longer Kachi Hashem, it no longer qualifies as Kachi Hashem. What's Rava going to do with our Mishnah? So Rava's going to introduce the idea that our Mishnah is talking about Me'ila Midrabanan. That when our Mishnah says that there's a din of Me'ila, it means on a Derabbanan level. The Gemara yesterday pointed out what's the difference between Me'ila Daraisa versus Me'ila Derabbanan, and basic differences. Me'ila Daraisa, you have to go through the three consequences of Karen, Chomish, and Asham. By Me'ila Derabbanan, it's just Karen. There's no Chomish and there's no Asham by Me'ila Derabbanan. Okay, there are other differences as well, but that's what the Gemara points out as the basic difference between the two. We noted yesterday, it's odd, according to Rabbah, the first Mishnah and Me'ila that introduces us to the world of Me'ila is talking about Me'ila Midrabanan. Meaning it's not even Me'ila Min HaTorah. We're not talking about bona fide Me'ila. We're talking about Gzeira Me'ila as Gzeira Midrabanan. Okay, we pointed that out yesterday. Okay, in the course of the discussion also yesterday, we introduced ourselves to a statement made by Ula. Ula quoted the name of Rav Yochanan, that when you have kachim that die, just simply die, right, whatever sickness, accident, whatever the case is, so it's no longer subject to Me'ila min haTorah, but it's subject to Me'ila min derabbanan. And that we all understand. Because if it dies without the benefit of a shechita, so that means it can't go up onto the Mizbech anymore. And that's not even an issue. Of course it can't go up on the Mizbech anymore. To go up on the Mizbech, the animal has to be shechted. This animal wasn't shechted, so therefore it's certainly no longer kachet Hashem. It certainly is no longer Me'ila min haTorah. But Ula says, but there's still going to be Me'ila midrabbanan. Okay. We started this yesterday. We're 7-8 lines from the bottom of the Amud on Beis Amud Beis. Lema tanin lahad Ula. So the Gemara would suggest now that which Ula said is a Mishnah. Lahad Ula am Rav Yochanan. Afagav de tanina it's Rech de Ula. So the Gemara says, you're right, it's a Mishnah, but we still need Ula. Why? Sagadat chamina hachalo bedila minhun avakachim shemetsu hol bedila minhun. Ema filo me'ila midrabanan lo kamashmalan. Look, because in our Mishnah, what we were talking about, an animal that was shechted in the south. So there's going to be an Isser of Me'ila midrabanan. But Ula was talking about an animal that just simply died. So an animal that died, it's an Avela. Right, I quoted the Rashi yesterday. Rashi says, "Nevelos miisi." Nevelos are disgusting. Who's gonna get close to a nevela? So therefore, you might have thought, without the statement of Ulam or of Yochanan, that there's not even a me'ila midrabanan on an animal which is nevela. So Kamash Malan, that's what Ula is coming to teach us, that there is me'ila on the derabanan level. Okay. Meisu Nami Tanina. Okay, we are now starting a Gemara that we have not started yet, and we are three lines from the bottom of the Amud on Beis Amud Beis. Meisu Nami Tanina. Now, the Gemara is basically saying, what do I need? Ula Amar of Yochanan. Again, his statement is that if an animal dies without the benefit of a shechita, I say animal, I mean a karban, dies without the benefit of a shechita, so it is not, there's no longer me'ilam in a Torah, it's no longer kachay Hashem, but there is me'ilam in the Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, but, I'm going to quote the following Mishnah. And the Mishnah says like this, Hanene menachatas kishihi chaya lo ma'al ashiyivkom u kishihi mesa kevin denene koshuhu ma'al. Okay. Mishnah upcoming in Mi'ila. Let's take a look at Rashi together. The Rashi says, Hanenem and Achatas. First of all, Rashi tells us that we're talking about a balas mum, that this animal in question is a blemished animal. So it was a started off as a carbon chatas. Okay? Person sinned, needed to bring a carbon chatas, designated this animal as a carbon chatas, and lo and behold, it gets a blemish. Okay. Now, as it gets a blemish, does it still have Kedusha? You bet it does. Meaning that just because it has a blemish doesn't remove the Kedusha Seguf. It still has Kedusha Seguf. So at that point in time, it's still subject to the Isser of Me'ila. Because the moment that you are Maktish, a Karban Chatas, it now is earmarked towards the Mizbeach. It's true that after you shech the animal, the meat of the animal will be eaten by the Kohanim, but that's only after you shech the animal. Right now, the animal is currently alive. The animal is a bal mum. It's a blemished animal. So, kishichai loma achiyifkom. Now, Rashi is going to explain this line of the Mishnah. We're going to go over this later on in the Masechta as well, but it's good to hear this now, just to get comfortable and familiar with these ideas. In order to be moel, right, and again, we don't want to, we're not condoning it, but we're just talking about how to successfully violate the Isser of Me'ila, so there you have to be pogame. Which means that it's not enough to just simply benefit from the animal, you have to depreciate from its value. Rashi writes, because now that the animal is a blemished animal, so now it has Kedusha. Is it going up onto the Mizbeach? No. So right now, all you're looking to do is redeem it. Which means that right now it doesn't have Kedusha, so it has Kedusha Damim. Lo mal achi chaser midameha. Kegon shetosh menetzem, ro shecharish bavi hi chisha. There you have to actually cause financial depreciation of the animal. The animal has to actually be lowered in value based on your benefiting from it. Rashi gives an example, plucking out the hair, plowing the animal, and the animal actually getting weaker and thinner. Rashi goes on to write, look, it's a balas mum, it's a blemished animal. Which means that right now, the only thing we're interested in is its value. It has kedushas damim, the kaimalan. And again, this is a rule that we'll see later on in Masechet Me'ila. If it's something which is, we're just interested in its value, meaning its Kedusha is defined by its value, not by it itself. You don't fully understand that yet, but hopefully...
So it's you, monetary value to the Beit HaMikdash that needs to maintain.
Right, correct. In other words, right now, its worth to the Beit HaMikdash is its value, not it itself. So therefore, to successfully violate the Isser of Me'ila, you must depreciate that value.
So if you, if you benefit from it without any depreciation, you're not in the Me'ila.
You're not, right, you didn't violate Me'ila.
Less than two
sela? It's a pruta, just the value of a pruta. Oh. Just the value of a pruta. So, ein ma'alim bo achi chas midamav. Aval kol she'eino omed ladamim. But if it's not omed ladamim, kigon koshel zahav shel hektesh. Meaning, let's say it's a golden cup, right, that belongs to hektesh. Where I guess it's used in the Beis Hamikdash. So there, if it's something where we're not in, the Beis Hamikdash is not interested in its value, but it as an object. So there, you don't need to depreciate its value. All you need to do is benefit from it. And as long as you benefit, and as long as the value of the benefit, everything is appraised, everything has a value. As long as the value of the benefit is appraised, so then you are molbe hektish. Good. So now, our Mishnah is talking about a chatas that has now a blemish. So as far as the Beis HaMikdash is concerned, the Beis HaMikdash is not interested in the animal, it's simply interested now in the value of the animal. Therefore, consequently, the way to be moel is actually, you have to actually diminish its value. Plucking out the hair, working the animal where the animal physically weakens, that is how you are moel behektish.
If it dies, then it's
no value. Now, when the animal dies. That's the second half of the Mishnah. Uchishihi mesa. The lav, I'm continuing reading in Rashi. The lav lid may kaim idein ponus akashon lachil klavim. Now, once the animal's dead, what are you going to do now? You're not going to redeem the animal because it's a nevela. If you redeem the animal, then what? You're going to redeem the animal, feed it to your dogs. Remember, that's one of the things that we've been discussing. We just came up in Temura. Okay, that you can't, it's a subject to a debate, but the position that we normally take is you can't redeem an animal just so that you can feed it to your dog. And if this animal dies without the benefit of a shechita, that's all that's going to happen, is that you're going to be poed to l'achilas klavim. Kemesh neva nebe shavapruta ma'al. So now, the din of me'ila changes. Because now, we're not interested in its value, it's just simply an object of kedusha. So there, you're moling the animal, you benefit from the animal. I mean, yeah, without devaluating it, you're now going to be mol behektish. Afa pishalo chisru, even though you didn't actually depreciate it. V'hai ma'al midirabanu. Now, this next part of Rashi is really important, just to understand where we're going with all this. Because, good, I gave you the basic difference between items that stand for its value versus items that stand for itself. Good. But why are we bringing in this Mishnah? Why are we learning this Mishnah right now? Look, the animal's dead. So we can all agree. There's no discussion. The animal's no longer subject to Me'ilah in the Torah. It's certainly not Kachi Hashem anymore. So when the Mishnah says that there's a din of Me'ilah after the animal's dead, the Mishnah must mean that there's only an Isser of Me'ilah Midarabana, not Midaraisa. Midaraisa.
Because once it's dead, there's no value for Beit HaMikdash.
It's not going on the Mizbech anymore.
But you can argue, you're saying there's like once it's dead,
anymore Kedusha Damim. It still has Kedusha's Damim. No. Let me try to be clear. Even after it's dead, it still has Kedusha's Damim. But you can't redeem it. Because the only purpose of redeeming it now would be to feed it to your dog. And we don't do that. So therefore, the only thing is disposal. But the point is that if you benefit from this dead animal, and the Mishnah says that there's a din of Me'ilah, it can only be Me'ilah Midarabana, not Me'ilah Midarabana. It can only be. So, Delachah Shemesh, Divra Kolein, Ba Me'ilah Midaraisa. Now, Rashi spills over to the next page. So, Elamai Ma'al Midarabana, so therefore the din of Me'ilah is only a din of Me'ilah Midarabana. And I continue reading in Rashi. V'hachahu b'chatas meza damal d'chamur k'dusha sadla chapar asya. Now, here's where the question comes in. Essentially, what this Mishnah is teaching us, first of all, fundamental difference between value versus the object itself being Kadosh. But more than that, furthermore, the Mishnah is telling us that dead animal is subject to Me'ilah. Any dead carbon? No. The Mishnah says that dead carbon, the subject to Me'ilah, is only by the carbon Chatas, and by no other carbon. Right. Demal de chamur kedusha sa. And why would that be? Meaning, why would there only be a din of Me'ilah, albeit midrabanan, by a dead carbon chatas and not by any other dead carbon? So Rashi over here introduces the following. Because when it comes to a chatas, chamura kedusha sa, its kedusha is holy. Now you want to tell me that its kedusha is holier than an ola? Hard to hear that. But Rashi's explaining where the Gemara's going.
Like, more like a nadah, but
This is to speak in not very technical terms, but a chatas is serious stuff. It's coming in as a result of a sin. So de la kapara ka'asya. It's coming for the purpose of kapara. Ava b'shar kashim kagon ola v'ashem v'sham itzibar bar all other karbanos like an ola and even an ashem and even sham itzibar mishim delav lechapara asim. Look, they're not coming for the purpose of kapara. Kev v'shamez v'leitz bo meila afilu midrabanan. So it sounds like from this mission that we just quoted that there's not even going to be meila midrabanan. This din of Me'ilah Midrabanan is limited to only dead carbon chatas and no other carbon. The kashal ula, and that obviously presents a difficulty for ula. Okay, now, pause over here in Rashi.
I'm sorry, why is it the name?
Because ula says, as a rule, any carbon that dies is still subject to Me'ilah Midrabanan.
And this is saying only
and this Mishnah is saying it's only by a dead carbon chatas. Good. So to the... Well, not yet. So sakadat chamina chatas hol chapar kaasya. Now, kevin denem and akoshu maal. I'm sorry. Let me just read. I'm reading the Gemara. So now, back to Beis Amud Beis. I'm sorry, I turned the page because of Rashi, but now we're back. So, Salka Dantcha Amina, Chatas, Hoel Ulecha Para Ka'asya, Bedilin Mina. Now, I know in the Gemara we have the word Lo Bedilin Mina. But what we're going to do is we're going to take out the word Lo. Why? Because Rashi does, and the Bach does. And as you'll see, based on the way that we just set up the question, so it's going to make much more sense now that the word low does not fit. Now, I know that's a major change between having low versus not having low. Okay. But here's what we're going to do. Look, here's what I might have thought. Because the carbon chatas has so much kedusha, look, people, right, human nature is such that when somebody says, well, the animal's alive, oh my gosh, that's a carbon chatas, right? Be careful with that, okay? So even when the animal's dead, so people, the nature of people is that, again, it's going to be basically the same attitude. Ooh, that's a carbon chatas. Meaning, let's stay away from that. So there would have been no need for the chachamim to have slapped a me'ila midrabanan on such an animal because it was a carbon chatas. And so everybody already is intuitively going to stay away from that animal. What the Mishnah has to tell us is, I know that there's a me'ila by all other karbanos, but what I'm adding to that is that there's even me'ila, midrabanan, by a dead carbon chatas. You could have made an argument that there should be no me'ila by dead carbon chatas because people stay away from it in general. While it was alive, people for sure stayed away from it, knowing that it's a carbon chatas, and everyone gave it extra special reverence. So even when it's dead, people also gave it extra special reverence. And so what the Mishnah has to tell us is that even by a carbon chatas that died, there's going to be a din of me'ila. Ava kashim hova lav l'chapar kasya bedila minun v'leith behu me'ila kamash malan. So the and that's in other words, but the Mishnah's in full agreement with Ula that there's going to be an Isser of Me'ila by all Karbanos that die on its own. Okay, good. All right, so the Gemara attacked Ula, the Gemara defended Ula. Let's do this one more time. Chatas shemesu mi'isba Me'ila. Now Chatas that dies, Karman Chatas that dies. There's really a din of Me'ila. Now again, this discussion is not Me'ila min haTorah, because let's remind each other, once the animal's dead, it's no longer going in the Mizbech, it's no longer Kachi Hashem, there is no Isser of Me'ila min haTorah of a dead carbon. What we're discussing right now, this entire discussion, Ula, and all this Mishnayos that we're quoting, is only about Me'ila midrabanan.
They say that there's no Me'ila midrabanan, then everybody can use that animal for anything they want.
Right, meaning correct. It's no longer Kachi Hashem, it's no longer going on the Mizbech. So min haTorah, you could just simply take that animal home and use the animal. But the Chachamim said no, that it was a carbon, so therefore they slapped the Me'ila into Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, V'hatanan, but let's take a look at the following now, which seems to be a Braisa, not a Mishnah. Chataos amesos. If you have an animal that's a chatas amesa, meaning one of the five animals that was a carbon chatas, but for any one of the five reasons the animal needs to die, right? No, you cannot bring it up onto the Mizbeach. Right? Vlad chatas, temuras chatas, chatas shemesu ba'alaha, chatas shekipur ba'acher, chatas shavar shnasa. Right? Remember, temura, end of temura, last parak of temura. We talked about this in length. So you have any one of the five carbon chatas that need to die. That doesn't mean it's dead yet. It means that it needs to go to die because it's no longer can be used as a carbon chatas. And they write, and they put it in a pen, and they let the animal die. Or any money that needs to go into the Dead Sea. Meaning, let's say the person set aside money because he needed to bring a carbon chatas. So what he did is he held up the money and said, this money is going to be designated towards my carbon chatas. And then that person dies. Okay, so now we have money that's earmarked for his carbon chatas. He doesn't need to bring a carbon chatas. He's dead. His death already provided him his kapara. So what do you do with the money? Take the money to the Dead Sea, throw it into the Dead Sea, destroy the money. So on these, meaning chatas and mesos, ma'os ha'ochos yam ha'melech, lo nenim v'lo mo'alin. So there's no, sorry, you can't benefit from it, and there's no me'ila. Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky. Okay. Now,
these animals are not dead yet.
Correct, correct.
How does the Kedusha disappear?
The Kedusha does not disappear.
So if you did use them, then it's...
Well, okay, wait, hold on a second. Just one step at a time. Lonenim v'lo mo'olen. Okay, now lonenim means you can't get hana from it. Now Rashi over here writes, midrabanan, the isur ika. Okay, midrabanan, rabbinically, you're not allowed to get benefit from it. But there's no din of mi'ila. Now, Rashi over here writes, and I know why Rashi writes this, but it's difficult because nearly every other time, and we're going to see this a lot through Masechet Me'ilah, this phrase of lonenim v'lo mo'olen. And we're almost always going to say that lonenim v'lo mo'olen means that there's no din of Me'ilah, you can't benefit from it, but there's no Isser of Me'ilah min HaTorah, but there is an Isser of Me'ilah min HaDerabanan. Rashi over here writes, there's no Isser of Me'ilah afilu min HaDerabanan.
There's no rabbinic
me'ila over here.
Right, right.
That's the way Rashi reads the Gemara over here, and I'm telling you, it's kind of misleading because even this is the first time in our Masechta we're being introduced to this phrase of lonen and v'lo mo'olen, and it's not what we normally assume it to mean. We normally assume it to mean that there's no me'ila min HaTorah, but there is me'ila min HaRabbanan. So, but over here, what it means, according to Rashi, is that there's no me'ila afilu min derabanan. I'm reading Rashi. Tahalek alamem alo ma'alim in deraisa v'amalim in derabanan delo mitras lamemra hachi dekem detana leberesh lo nenim in derabanan deleka ela yisur ba'ama heche mitras lamemra avamo'alim ela hachi mitras lamemra. This is how you explain it. Lo nenim in derabanan v'lo mo'alim nami in derabanan. There is simply no me'ila period to it whatsoever. So, now,
what's the reason how he said that?
Because it does, right, lo nanim and it's just strange that we're going to make a shift from speaking derabanan to speaking
d'oraisa. There's just no penalty.
So
you're forbidden.
So to be consistent through this phrase, it means there's no, you can't get hana midrabanan, and there's no me'ila midrabanan.
So the thing is, but the difference is that if you got a hana, there's no penalty for it.
Right.
No rabbinic penalty.
Now, to speak to your point, the animal's not dead yet. The animal's alive. So what's the Gemara's question right now? Meaning, Ula's statement was about a dead animal, and this animal is still alive and good. So Rashi, in the next Rashi, addresses that. And Rashi says, this animal's not dead, but just as well. Meaning, it may be walking on all fours, but look, it's holech lamisa, meaning there's nothing else we could do with it right now other than the fact that you have to let it die. So for all intents and purposes, you know what we can call it? We'll call it dead. Right? Rashi writes, Amri chatos amesis, kemen lo kaima la krava el lamisa. The only thing that's happening to this animal right now is gotta let it die. Bidili minai rinshi. So again, the idea is that people will tend to stay away from it. And afilu mechayim, even when the animal's alive. V'kol shekein, Rashi writes, la'achar misa d'me'isi v'lo asu le'isnu minayhu. For sure, after it's dead, meaning again, it's human nature. If people have been reverential to it and stayed away from it while the animal was alive, so when the animal's dead also, people would have stayed away from it. So now, if all this is correct, if our understanding of this is correct, so again, this is a knock on Ula. Because Ula said that any dead karban is subject to mi'ila midrabanan. And now what the Gemara is asserting is by chatas, that's not correct, that's not true. So amri chatas amesus bechayem bedil minahu lafuke hechde mechayem dolo bedil minahu. So the Gemara says, look, we're just going to make a very simple distinction. While the animal's still alive, people will stay away from it because that was a karban chatas. But once the animal's dead, people will say, okay, it's dead, it's not going on the Mizbech anymore, let's go get it, let's go bring it home. So therefore the Chachamim slapped a Me'ila Midrabanan on the dead carcass of what once upon a time was a Chatas. Okay. Period. Okay, so we are right now, that ends the topic of our discussion for today. So we have defended Ula. Ula says that anytime you have a Karban, and our conclusion is going to be any karban that dies, and it's certainly not going on the Mizbeach anymore because it's a Nevela. Nevertheless, there's a din mi'ila midrabanan on that carcass of the animal. We have Mishnayos that indicate that as well. The Mishnah indicates that that's true by Achatas, but as the Gemara explained, it's true by Achatas and it's true by other animals, by all other karbanas as well. Okay, we're going to return now to our machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Yosef. Let's remind ourselves. I shechted a karban, kachim, kachim, chatas, asham, ol, I shechted in the south. And the Mishnah says that they're still subject to Me'ilah. And there's a machlokus between Rabba and Rav Yosef. Now remember, Rabba says, Im alu, yardu. If it goes up onto the Mizbech, you bring it right back down again. It can't, it's so puzzled, it's so disqualified, it's not to be put onto Mizbech at all.
They're both arguing within Rabbi Shimon.
And Ben is correct, so correct, meaning that this machlokas amarayim between Rabban and Rav Yosef is only within the position of Rabbi Shimon.
Rabbi Yehuda says no, it always goes down,
right? Rabbi Yehuda says they always bring it down. Right. Which, by the way,
Rabbi
Yehuda says bring it down. Yeah. If you remind me in just a couple of minutes, that's an important piece of information. I'll explain. Just remind me after I finish this discussion. And that's right when I get to the Tiyufta, just tap me on the shoulder and I'll tell you why that's a very important piece of information. Okay. And Rav Yosef says im alu lo yardu, that if it goes up onto the Mizbech, it could stay up onto the Mizbech. Eisvei Rav Yosef l'Rava. Now Rav Yosef is going to ask the following question to Rava: Chada migo chada v'chada migo chada. Right? In baseball, you know, you have back-to-back home runs. What happens when three people hit, three consecutive batters hit home runs? So they don't have an expression for that. I guess they go back to back to back, but it's so it really happens. Well, basically what we're going to do is, I don't know if these are home runs, and you know my sports analogies are horrible to begin with. These are basically going to be a sequence of questions. It's a question built into a question built into a question. Meaning, I'm going to string together three Mishnayos. We're going to learn three Mishnayos together. And once I get to the end of those three Mishnayos, and you put all three points together, you will see, Rav Yosef is now talking to Rava, right? You're dead. Meaning, your position is going to be so untenable after we learn all three Mishnayos together. So, let's begin. Mishnah number one. V'kulan emitam emigadim abeis abliya. Birds. When a bird becomes a nevela. So that means now that if I swallow a kezias of the bird, I will become tame. Birds are a strange animal, right? Where the chuma of a nevelas oaf does not come through contact, does not come through carrying. It comes through swallowing the bird. Now it's a nevela and you shouldn't be eating it. Agreed. But if you eat it, you will become tummy. This is tumas beis ablia. And what the Mishnah over here is discussing is what happens when a bird is shechted shelo bimkomo in the incorrect place. Eimetamim begadim beis ablia. It still is not going to be metamim begadim beis ablia, which means the bird is not an avela. Umoalim behem, it's still subject to the iser of meila. Chutz mechatas ofsha salamata kamasa chatas haof. L'shem chatas. And the exception would be a chatas bird that you did below the chut hasukra, below the red line, kemasa chatas ha'of, treating it like a chatas ha'of for the purpose of a chatas, meaning there you blundered it so badly that there it's going to be an avela. But generally speaking, though, birds that are shechted in the wrong location are not going to be an avela. Okay, that's mission number one. Let's go. Mission number two. V'ktani ilavei kol shayapsula b'kodesh ena matame b'gadama b'beis abliya. V'chol shalo hayapsula b'kodesh matame b'gadama b'beis abliya. If the disqualification of the bird came in kodesh, meaning inside the azara, as long as you're within the walls of the azara, you're fine. Meaning the malika worked and the bird is not in avela. But once you're outside the azara, it will be metame begadim beis ablia, which means that the bird is a nevela, meaning that the bird is not shechted, considered shechted at all, and so therefore the bird is a nevela, and swallowing a little bit of the meat of that bird is going to give you tumas of tahor. Tumas nevela of tahor. And that's mission number two. So basically now, shechting a bird in the wrong location is okay. Mission number two tells us as long as it's done in the azar, viktani. And now Mishnah number three, Koshay Psula Bekodesh, Im Alu, Lo Yardu. Now, if you have Psula Bekodesh, meaning if the disqualification of any carbon takes place inside the Azara and it goes up onto the Mizbeach, Lo Yardu. It doesn't go down from the Mizbeach. It stays on the Mizbeach. So again, Rav Yosef was of the position that if I shechted a karban on the south side, kachem, on the south side of the Mizbeach, even though it was shechted in the wrong location, but since it was shechted in the Azara, if it goes on the Mizbeach, Mizbeach can tolerate it. And that's why when he learns our Mishnah and Me'ilah, and our Mishnah says it's subject to Me'ilah, it means Me'ilah min Torah. And now, by stringing together these three Mishnahs that describe the Malikas Of, the insertion of the thumb into the back of the neck of the bird. So basically, when you string these three Mishnahs together, what conclusion do you arrive at? That the bird is not an Avela, and furthermore, if it goes up onto the Mizbeach, it stays up onto the, it stays on the Mizbeach, despite the fact that it was shechted in the wrong location in the Azara itself. Tiyufta derabba tiyufta. So the Gemara says, after all said and done, so this is going to knock out Rabba's position. Meaning the Gemara says, Rav Yosef seems to be correct. Now, generally speaking, right, we have our rules of psak, meaning that Abaye v'Rava, the halacha is like Rava with six exceptions. So Rav Yosi and anyone else, halacha is like Rav Yosi, fine. So we have our rules of psak. What happens when there's a machlokes between Rav and Rav Yosef? So who do we normally follow like? So we normally follow Rabba, right? Except with three exceptions. Ben, you're on today. So with three exceptions, we're going to paskin like Rabba, not like Rav Yosef. So if that's true and if that's correct, so this is not my question. The Rishonim already asked this question. So our Gemara seems to be giving us a fourth example, because our Mishnah says that Tiyufta de Rabba Tiyufta, meaning by stringing together those three Mishnayos. So the conclusion is Rav Yosef is right that if I shecht an animal just in the wrong place in the south side, it can go up onto the mizbeach b'diavad, not lechatzchila, and it could stay on the mizbeach. And the Gemara has punctuated the whole discussion by saying tiyufta de rabbi tiyufta, which usually means we're going to side with Rav Yosef, and meanwhile. This is not one of the three exceptions. And meanwhile, you take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam says, what happens if you put up onto the Mizbeach? You take it down again. Meaning, like Rabba. Even though the Gemara's conclusion is that the Rav Yosef's right. So this is where we get to go back to your point. Meaning, one of the things to realize is that Rabba and Rav Yosef are having a debate, but only within the position of Rabbi Shimon. Meaning, this Machlokas Amarayim is built into a Machlokas Tanayim. But in other words, the first question you have to realize is between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, who do we follow?
I'm coming to say to Rabbi Yehuda.
Right, because Rabbi Yehuda is a Tana, and he can argue with these Mishnayos.
Uh-huh. Oh,
it's not a thrilling answer, not an exciting answer, but that's
Who's
Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda is one of the Tanaim. That would be my defense of. Rabbi Yehuda is that he's a Tana. So this whole machlokas is only within Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda says that if they go up on the Mizbech, they come right back down again. And so therefore, in the machlokas and Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, within Rabbi Shimon, it seems like Rabbi Yosef is right and Rabbi is wrong. It seems that way. But when you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture, you realize that it's really machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and this machlokas Amarayim is only within the position of Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so that's why it's important to look at the global picture of this whole dispute. Okay, v'had to pliki by Rabbi Rav Yosef pshita lei de Rabbi Elazar. Sorry, forgot how to speak English. Okay. There's a debate between Rabba and Rav Yosef about whether the animal goes up should come back down again. And even though there's a debate between Rabba and Rav Yosef, it seems pretty clear cut to Rabbi Elazar, in terms of what should be the result. Now, Rabbi Elazar is going to ask a very detailed question. I'm going to go through the question. I'm going to explain the question. But it's super detailed, his question. And essentially what the Gemara is going to walk away with is, did you see all the assumptions he made going into that question? It must be for him, it was a no-brainer in terms of an animal that was shechted in the wrong location, whether if it goes up onto the Mizbech, it could stay on the Mizbech. Okay. Now here's his question. Olas mamas yachid, sheichnitzo lifnim, kaltua mechitzos lechol davar. Okay. This is a very limited discussion. either we're going to go back to the 14 years between our entering into the land of Israel and our division of the territories to the respective Shvatim. Those are called the 14 years of Gilgal. Or, if you want, fast forward another 369 years after the destruction of Shiloh, where there was a Mishkan either in Gilgal or in Nov, for those 57 years of Jewish history. Now, either during those 14 years or 57 years of Jewish history, so if you and I wanted to, assuming our associations are okay with it, we could make a bama in our backyards, and we can offer carbon right in our own backyards. Sure. Just make a little elevation, and offer carbon in your backyard. Now, it's limited in terms of what carbonates you can actually bring, and you go back to the end of Zvachim, and you'll remind ourselves what can be done. Now, do I need to call over my local Kohen? So if I'm going to offer a carbon in my own backyard, I can do it myself. I don't need a Kohen. I don't need klisharis. Meaning the rules, there's no mechitzos, obviously. Right? The rules are totally relaxed when you bring a carbon in your backyard. Now, what happens if I designated a carbon to be brought in my own backyard? Okay? And then I take that animal into the Mishkan of Gilgal, right? What we call Bama Gedola, or into the Mishkan of Shiloh, of either Nov or Gilgal Nov, or what am I missing? Givon. Okay. What if I take that animal into the Bama Gedola of the time? Kaltua Mechitzos. The walls of the Bama Gedola, so to say, have absorbed the animal. Meaning, your animal now is got upgraded. Even though it was going to be born in your backyard, but now that you brought it into Gilgal, so now it has to be offered up on Gilgal. So, Katum Mechitzos Chol Davar. Now, by Rebbe Lazar. Now, Rebbe Lazar says, okay, good. Good. That's our starting point for the discussion. Now, Rebbe Lazar says, if this were to happen, so let's take this one step further. What a detailed question. Let's say I had an animal that I earmarked for my backyard. I brought it into Gilgal. It now has to be offered in Gilgal. And it was an Ola. And instead of shechting it on the north side of Gilgal, I shechted it on the south side. That's Rebbe Lazar's question. To which the Gemara says, but do you see where he started his assumption? Meaning, he wasn't talking about an animal that started in Gilgal. He was talking about an animal that started in your own backyard. So therefore, maybe there, because the rules are so relaxed in your own backyard, so maybe the rules continue to be relaxed, even though you are in the Azara of Gilgal, the courtyard of Gilgal. This is Rabbi Al-Azhar's question. To which the Gemara now says, isn't it obvious to him whether or not he goes like Rav Yosef or Rabba? So mi dekami ba'ilei lechada mechlal de'idach pshitalei. So since he's asking such a complicated question, it sounds like the easier question, which would be, what if the animal was earmarked originally for Gilgal, and I shechted it in the wrong location? Can I then bring it up? It would seem obvious. Now, by the way, which position, what's obvious? Meaning, which position are we going to take? Sounds like, at this stage of the Gemara, it for sure has to come down from the Mizbech. Sounds that way. Now, the Gemara, and here's where the reading of the Gemara is going to get a little choppy, because the Gemara is basically going to say, no. Meaning, Rabbi Elazar could learn like Rabbah. Rabbi Elazar could learn like Rav Yosef. Even though he asked such a complicated question, but even the default position is not clear. Ika Rabba, Ika de Rav Yosef. He could have gone either way. Chada migo, chada kami baile. And it could have been a question within a question. Meaning, the starting point could have gone either way. Ad kan lo kama Rabba hasami malo yardu. Look, let's start off with Rabba's position. Rabba's position is, if you shecht an ola in the south side of the Mizbeach, and you put it up on the Mizbeach, take it down. Mechita ki tiknua pasla, shalo ki tiknua lo pasla. Look, that's by an animal where it started in the Azara. But here, this animal started in your backyard. So maybe Rabbah would cut you a break over here. Maybe although you shechted this animal in the south, but look, at one point this animal could have been shechted in your very own backyard. So maybe the rules would have relaxed. Oh, Dilma, feel the Rav Yosef. Or maybe no, maybe the starting point for this whole discussion could have been Rav Yosef. Now what did Rav Yosef say? Imalu, if it goes up, Yardu. Da'amri malta lo say raid. Sorry, other way around. If it goes up, don't bring it down. Mechita ki tiknua kalta. Shalo ki tiknua lo kalta. So there, look, the animal started in the Azara. So it, so to say, has its protective walls around it. So meaning, even though you shecht in the south, and even though you shouldn't have shecht in the south, but it was within the walls of the Azara, so that's why, regardless of where you shechted it, b'di'evad, it could stay up onto the Mizbech. But your animal that started off in your backyard, designated to be shecht in your backyard, maybe never had the benefit of the walls of the Azara, and so therefore that animal necessarily needs to be shechted on the north side of the Azara.
There's no concept of the Bama Yafi that if you take it away, it's
in this case, it's the opposite of Dichui, because it got like an upgrade.
No, but the thing is that in a way it was a Dichui because you took it away from your own, and once it gets that status, can you bring it up
Right. And to this, now the Gemara says Teku. Now, again, Teku is kind of a strange term to use right now, because we didn't ask a question. All we're trying to do is trying to understand, did Rabbi Elazar take Rabba's position as a default position, or Rav Yosef's position as a default position? Teku over here just simply means we don't know which position he takes as a default position. Not that we're confused about the halacha, or we don't know how to resolve the halacha. The Gemara already resolved the halacha. The Gemara already said that we go like Rav Yosef and not like Rabba. This teku is just kind of like, I don't know where to place Rabbi Elazar. I'm Rav Gidol Merav. New discussion. We'll just start it this morning, and tomorrow we'll continue with this new discussion. Zvikas pigol eino motzi midemi ila bekatche kadashim ve'eino mevi lidemi ila bekatchem kalim. Okay. I'll tell you what. Where I'm going to start with this discussion is a basic point, which I'm going to repeat again tomorrow morning, the beginning of tomorrow's daf, and we'll pause over here and we'll pick it up tomorrow. And this is important to realize. I didn't make this point clear yesterday. We're talking about Me'ila by Karbanos. Okay, and I told you the rule is Kachi Hashem. That's your rule, which means that anything that's earmarked for the Mizbeach is subject to Me'ila. Anything that's not earmarked for the Mizbeach is not subject to Me'ila. So here's the thing that we all have to realize. I designate animals a Karban Ola. From the moment of inception, from the moment that I make this animal carbonola, I give it status as carbonola, it's now subject to me'ila. Right, because the animal is now earmarked for the mizbeach, its entire animal. Okay, the hide is not going on the mizbeach, I get that, but still, the animal essentially is going on the mizbeach. So from that point, there's an issur of me'ila. How about after I shech the animal? It's still going to be an issur of me'ila. How about after zrikas adam? There's still going to be an issur of me'ila. Meaning there will continuously be an issur of me'ila for the carbonola from the point of inception to the point where I actually offered up onto the mizbeach. Okay. How about by carbon chatas? Essentially the same. The moment that I set it aside as a carbon chatas, it's now subject to the issur of me'ila. How about after I shech it? Still. How about after zrikas dam? There's one small difference. It's an important difference.
It's going to be edible by the
Kohen. Right. Once I sprinkle the blood, so now the meat of the Karban Chatas is now edible by the Kohanim. So by a Chatas and by an Asham, Zrikas Adam will remove the Isser Me'ila by the meat. And finally, let's just say this now, and I'll say it again beginning tomorrow morning. What's by a Shlamim? Shlamim is totally different. Because the shlamim is really not going on the mizbeach. Right? It's kachim kalim. There are parts of the shlamim that are going on the mizbeach, but the shlamim essentially is going to be eaten by me, it's just now with restrictions. Okay. So by shlamim, when I set it aside as a carbon shlamim, is there an issur of me'ila by the carbon? No. No. And what about when I shecht it? Still not yet. What about when I sprinkle the blood? Now there will be an Isser of Me'ila, but for the meat? No. That's not Kachi Hashem. Only for the parts that go up onto the Mizbeach. Right, by the Imurim. So you understand that there's a major difference between Ola versus Shlamim. And Chatas is somewhere in the middle. But by Ola, right, or no, you know what, let's say it like this. There's a major difference between Chatas and Shlamim.
By chatas, when I sprinkle the blood, it removes the issa me'ila from the carbon chatas. By shlamim, it creates an issa me'ila by the imurim. It's a major difference. I'll state that again at the beginning of tomorrow. It's an important point to realize as we go through the Masechta. Okay, Rabbi Chananya ben Akasha Maratza, Kashbaruch Zakusol Ficha, Chir Mentor, Mr. Shanem, and Echafet, and Mansukoya, Gilter, and Yadir. Again, the learning we do this morning would be for a continued Refuah Shlema, for Refal Zaka Avram ben Yakira Avigayel.